real person, breathing, living, and smiling. So welcome to our meeting. I think we'll start with the roll call. And the icebreaker this month when we do the roll call is, what's the best advice you've ever been given? What's the best advice you've ever been given? I see some of you smiling. I see some of you pondering. So let's see. And we're going to start with Ashley. Is Ashley here? I always get your name wrong. Brian?
Yep, that's me.
What's the best advice you've ever been given?
I think I'm going to use what I just told you. My dad told me, I didn't know what to do with myself after graduating high school. And he said, well, you should be a nurse. You always have a job. It fits really well.
Okay, all right. You took your father's advice.
I did.
Great. Emily.
I'm Emily. I am a consumer of public health services. And growing up, my dad always told me, there's no such thing as a good idea without being willing to be in charge of the committee.
I'll remember that. That's right. Franklin Johnson. Sorry, you're chewing.
Well, the best advice I got wasn't really words of advice. When I was about 4 years old, my father got the cheapest wine he could find, blew cigar smoke in my face, and pretty much cured me from wanting to smoke or drink. I used to think beer was like root beer. When I used to get real beer, I was really shocked.
Just like that at all. That's a different way to get advice, that's for sure. Chief Morey.
Jeff Morey, Vancouver Police Chief, at least through October 11th. And before I do my icebreaker, I want to introduce Assistant Chief Christine Buist. This will be my last FAC meeting, because at the next meeting I'll be actually on vacation before I go to retirement. And Chief Buist comes to us from Las Vegas Metro. She spent 20 plus years down there, quite a bit of experience. She's been with us now just a little over a year, and she's going to stand in for me for the remainder of the year until you guys all decide who you want as your next law enforcement representative. So if you can win her over with some good food and
she's never left Clark County.
She's never left Clark County, that's correct.
There you go.
So welcome to Chief Buist. Just been an amazing asset and resource to the police department, and really helped me through this last year, which I've shared with some of you, have been very rough for me, just from a mental health perspective. But best advice I probably have ever given, so my grandparents were from Italy. They were immigrants when they got here, didn't speak any English, and my grandfather passed away in 1983, but I remember him telling me when I was a younger man that if you want to eat, you have to work, which I've done pretty much my whole life, at least till October 11th, so.
Would you like to have a piece of advice?
Probably the best piece of advice, and this is usually advice that I give people as they come up through this career, is make sure whatever decision you make, you can look at yourself in the mirror every morning.
Dr. Fisher. Mm.
That's a tough one, so one of the clinics that I help with is addiction medicine, and so we treat about 800 of some of the most desperate individuals that are addicted to opioids and fentanyl. And so my top advice came from Nancy Reagan, which was just say no.
All right, Dr. Duffin.
My daddy told me when I was young and all the way through, told all of us, the bigger the risk, the bigger the reward.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Dr. Trump.
The best advice I had was from my father, who was in the military. And he would tell me, you know, whenever I always wanted to quit, somebody said, just don't quit. Just keep going. And it's been proved to be helpful throughout all the challenges of my life. So,
Lori
Schott.
Sorry.
No. That's it. It's got all the letters in there. So.
gosh, I first thing came to my mind was from my brothers, but it was, if you're not cheating, you're not trying, and I don't think that's... well, that was the only one that came to mind.
It's memorable, though.
That's right.
That's a good one.
Mark Collier.
Probably one that comes to mind, be responsible, and then you can be free.
Okay. Marla, Sanger.
What came to my mind, on my mind for a reason, my grandma, I was very close to her. They were outdoorsy people. She fished and they hunted and they lived in Cornell, Washington, pretty isolated place. And I loved spending summertime with them. But she told me, I had mentioned to her when I was still in, I think I might have been about 18, and that I was thinking about getting married. And I said, you know, the statistics on marriage, they're not good. It looks like a bad idea, but I think we're going to get married anyway. And we did get married when I was 19. And she said to me, she said, well, Marla, she said, I can tell you this, that if you don't ever take any chances in this life, you're never going to do much of anything good. So. We did get married, and we just had our 52nd wedding anniversary yesterday.
Michael Watkins.
Hi, I'm Michael Watkins, the tribal manager for the Pellis Indian Tribe. I just wanted to say welcome from Las Vegas. I worked for the Las Vegas Paiute Tribe for a number of years.
Oh, okay.
You probably know them.
Yes.
I think the best advice I got was from a tribal elder years ago that said, listen more than you speak.
Nissa Buchanan.
See, I think probably the best advice, although not always followed, was my dad when I turned 21. Nothing good happens after midnight.
He is correct.
Hard to follow that.
Paul just took a bite, so we'll let him chew. Paul, you're next.
The best advice that I got was a friend of mine told me, I was born and raised in Houston, Texas. And a friend of mine told me, go west, young man, go west. And I'm so happy that I did that because I moved from Houston to LA and then up to Vancouver. And I'm so happy that I'm not in Texas right now. Definitely.
I'm Sandy Brown, and I represent Consumer for Public Health Services. And the piece of advice I got was from my uncle, and he said, you have to have a job to pay the bills, but don't have a job for the pay. Do it because you love it and that you're giving back. Mm-hmm. And then you can pay the bills. But to have a job that you love and not be married to the paycheck only. So, and I did find a job that I love, so. All right, Tracy Hernandez.
Here. Yeah. I represent Keysol, and I guess the best advice came from my mom, said don't buy it if you can't afford it. But I'm like, she's never had any debt except for her house in her entire life. I said, but yeah, Mom, you paid $8,000 for your house today. So, but I still try to follow that, don't buy it if you can't afford it.
Nice. Tyler Clary.
Tyler Clary, representing Clark County Water Utilities. I think probably the advice I got from my dad when I was younger, and just he was someone that never wanted to be late for anything, and it's kind of carried over for me as well. If you're not early, you're late.
All right. Council Marshall.
Sue Marshall, I serve on the county council, and I think this is advice I've heard throughout my life from multiple people, and I told myself, and that's be patient.
Dr. Melnick.
Hi. My first main job as a young primary care physician working for the county health department in Multnomah County, Portland, and I'm sure this is hard for folks to believe, but I was a bit full of myself and a little bit out of control. And I had a medical director who sat me down and basically said, if you're going to work in an environment like this, and especially in a public health environment, you're part of a team and you have to act like that. So that stayed with me. I don't know how well I'm exemplifying that, but it stayed with me for a long time.
Good one. Dana, 19?
She's out today.
Okay. Jerry Preston?
Hello. Michael, you stole mine. My dad taught me to speak less and listen more, but I'll have another one my mom gave me, which is to be yourself.
Jeff Harbison.
Jeff Harbison, Administrative Services Director. I've got two. One of them was don't ever get outworked. That's sort of like with the don't ever give up. You might not be the fastest, the tallest, whatever, but don't get outworked. That's one thing that you can't control. And the other one is don't split face cards.
Roxanne.
I'm Roxanne Wolf, I'm the Deputy Director of Public Health, and my grandfather was a baker, and his best advice was, you better start every day with a cookie, and then you won't have any bad days, so I try to do that as much as I can.
Kathleen Lovegren.
I'm Kathleen Lovegren, I'm an epidemiologist, and we're going to talk about healthy history today, I guess I'm kind of an overachieving workaholic kid. The best advice I got was just to have fun sometimes.
All right. David Henson.
Yes, I manage our health assessment evaluation team at Clark County Public Health. And my mother told me when I was younger, if you want a lot of friends, don't be negative and ask a lot of questions of others and not to talk about yourself.
All right, Mallory.
I think the best advice that I received from my mom, which doesn't seem as cool as everybody else's, but was to make sure you take a lot of vacations without your children. And I mean, in early cases with my husband.
Good. And we'll circle around to Ashley.
Hi, I'm Ashley. I'm the youth representative. I think one of the best advice I've gotten from my mom was to always turn the page, even one day doesn't work out, the next day still is there.
Good. All right. Well, thank you. That was really interesting to hear what everybody's advice was. I have a new piece of advice of when I went into retirement was have fun first, but I find out I'm working more than I did when I was working, and the fun is yet to come. Oh, well, I think that's fun, but fun first is a good retirement model, so pass that on to Chief Mallory. It's have fun first. All right. Let's see, I don't think we have any members of the public here today, so we can move on to Jeff and an update on the budget.
All right, we're moving early. 2025 has been submitted. We have our environmental public health fee ordinance going to the Board of Health on September 25th. We had a great work session with the Board of Health. I do not expect any pushback on our proposal. I think we'll get the votes necessary to pass. So 2025 is pretty much put to bed and looks okay. The contract negotiations with the bargaining units is ongoing for 2025 through 2027. I'm waiting for information on what kind of salary adjustments to expect for 2025 forward. I really don't have a lot to share about the next budget, other than it's not going to be great. I already know that. How bad it is, though, I really can't say yet. I think it's going to be worse than I've been letting on, based on information I've received that I can't really talk about yet. But I do think it's going to be worse than we anticipated, even worse than what I was talking about in prior meetings. So
talking about 26 will be worse?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So I apologize. I don't have a lot. As soon as we get some data and I know what 2026 is going to look like, I will definitely bring it to FAC and share, because I think we're going to spend some time talking about it.
Great. Anybody have any questions for Jeff? All right, I need to back up on our agenda. I forgot to review and approve our meeting minutes from last time. And Mallory sent those out. Hopefully everybody had a chance to look at them. Does anybody have any changes to them? can I ask for a motion and a second to approve the minutes?
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? Okay.
Sandy, I'm sorry. Can we make the motion and second? I apologize.
Second.
Oh, you second?
By Corrine.
Got it.
All right, now we'll move forward to Kathleen's presentation, an overview of the healthy youth survey data. So welcome, Kathleen.
Thank you. So again, I'm Kathleen Lovgren. I'm an epidemiologist in our health assessment and evaluation unit in Clark County Public Health. And I'll just share a little bit of our new healthy youth survey results. You can go to the next slide, Henry. Sorry. So yeah, we'll just do an overview of the youth survey, the risk and protective factors framework, and then start exploring some of the data. Next slide. So healthy youth survey is a biennial survey of youth across Washington in the 6th, 8th, 10th, and 12th grades. It's an in-school survey, it's anonymous and voluntary. It's a huge survey and a big collaborative effort between all of these agencies. The Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction, the Cannabis Board, Healthcare Authority, and the Washington Department of Health. And then, of course, all of the schools that administer it. And it's really comprehensive, everything from substance use to mental health, physical eating or physical activity and healthy eating. This is kind of the survey where we get the estimates for all of those health and well-being.
Kathleen, is it new? I haven't heard of it before.
It's not new.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. And next slide. So it actually started in 2002.
Wow.
And from 2002 to 2018, it was administered in the fall of even years. But the survey for the fall of 2020 was postponed due to the pandemic until the fall of 2021. So now it's administered in the odd years, so 2021, 2023, and the next will be in 2025. And then along with the pandemic, there was also a shift to move the survey online. So from 2002 to 2018, the survey was all paper and pencil. And then in 2021, there was an online format and then an optional paper and pencil version. But now, in 2023 and onwards, it's going to be 100% online. So I'm just showing all this, one, because we're going to be looking at a lot of trends, and all of these things could have impacted the data, so these are important to keep in mind when we're looking at those trends. Next slide. Our participation was a little bit lower in 2023 than previous years. Usually if we have 70% or greater participation, our results are generally representative of the whole grade. From 40 to 69%, they may be representative, and 40% or less, they're likely not representative. And so for every grade, we fell into this middle category where the results may be representative. But they are definitely representative of the students who took the survey, and in Clark County, we had over 14,000 students who completed the survey, which is quite a lot, and it's a big effort, and they deserve the voice to be heard. So we are still going to
use it. Is it just administered in public and public school setting, or do it have any of the private schools?
I think it's just public schools. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they take it during school time, like class,
yes.
Designated class time?
Yeah, it's taken during school. The school takes the survey at the exact same time. So. Next slide. So for a lot of this data, we're going to be looking at it through a risk and protective factors framework. So essentially, a risk factor is something that increases risk of a negative health outcome, like substance use disorder.
where a protective factor is something that decreases risk of a negative health outcome or prevents it from happening altogether. So you can kind of think of this as like a scale. The more risk factors a student has, the higher likelihood that they'll use substances or have poor mental health outcomes. And the more protective factors a student has, the less risk they'll have of using substances or so on. Next slide. So we're going to start by looking at some of the risk factor data from Healthy Houston. The first is problematic or risky internet use. And this is a relatively new question, an emerging issue for youth. They were asked three questions to assess their relationship with the internet. They were, how often do you experience increased social anxiety due to your internet use? How often do you feel withdrawal when away from the internet? And how often do you lose motivation to do other things that need to get done because of the internet? And based on their answers to these questions, if they're above a certain cutoff, they were categorized as having a problematic or risky internet use behavior. And so it was about half of 10th graders and a little over half of 12th graders who showed signs of problematic internet use. And it seems like this is increasing with age, too. And also, among the 10th graders who showed signs of problematic internet use, they reported 2.5 times higher rates of anxiety than those who didn't have that problematic internet use. So it's maybe increasing risk of poor mental health outcomes. Next slide. So this is bullying, the percentage who reported being bullied in the past month. And the light blue is 8th graders and the darker blue is 10th graders. Usually bullying is a little higher in the younger grades and tends to decrease as kids get older. But we did see significant decreases in bullying in 2021, and then they jumped back up significantly for the 8th graders in 2023. This could have been because of the pandemic. In 2021, they were in school in person for the most part, but they were just getting back to being in person, so it could be because of the pandemic, but the rates seem to have gone back up. Next slide.
Can I ask one thing? Did it specify, was it just self-reported of being bullied? Did it differentiate whether it was online or in person?
It did give a definition of bullying. It could be online due to their interpretation of the question. There is a question specifically about being bullied online, but this one wasn't specific to that. So there's also 11 questions on Healthy Youth Survey that get at traumatic experiences such as physical or emotional or sexual abuse or dating violence, housing or food insecurity, just feeling unsafe at school or in their community, or also being bullied. And these traumatic experiences, they're sometimes called adverse childhood experiences or ACEs. And so based on their answers to these 11 questions, they're assessed for the number of ACEs. So for example, if a student said that they experienced physical violence and food insecurity and they were bullied, they would have 3 ACEs. So this graph shows the number of ACEs, and about 40% had no ACEs. But then you can see, going down the graph, about 16% reported 4 or more ACEs. Next slide. So this is the same graph as before, but added in the orange is the percent of students who used alcohol, marijuana, cigarettes, or vapor products in the past month by the number of aces. And as the number of aces go up, the higher the drug and alcohol use goes up. So among those 40% that had zero aces, only 9% used drugs and alcohol. But among the 16% that had four or more, 39% used drugs and alcohol. So our youth who are experiencing the most adversity are the ones who are most at risk for substance use, basically. Next slide. So now we get to the protective factor data. One important protective factor is having a trusted adult. About two-thirds of 8th and 10th graders reported having an adult in their community they could talk to. And about 4 out of 5 6th, 8th, and 10th graders reported being able to ask a parent or guardian for help. Next slide. Another important protective factor is having space to go to after school. And 40% of Clark County 10th graders reported that they participated in a supervised after-school activity for 3 or more days a week. And in this graph, this is the students, the number of after-school activities they did per day by HOPE. And HOPE is assessed by 4 different questions. It's 1, I can think of the ways I can think of many ways to get the things in life that are most important to me. I'm doing just as well as other kids my age. When I have a problem, I can come up with lots of ways to solve it, and I think things I have done in the past will help me in the future. These questions are meant to assess their agency and pathways, which is basically like their belief in themselves and their abilities, and their belief in their ability to find ways to achieve their goals. And this is what researchers have defined as hope in children. And so based on their answers to these questions, they're put into 4 categories, the no or low hope, slight hope, moderate hope, or high hope. And so the more after school activities they did, the higher hope they had. The 3 or more days a week, 54% had higher hope. 1 to 2 days a week, it was 39%, and then 0 days, it was 31%. So having those spaces where kids can interact with peers and their trusted adults outside of school or home are a really important predictive factor. Next slide. Okay, so for the next, the rest of the data, we're going to be talking about mental health and substance use. And for this data, we're really focusing in on the 10th graders. And that's because for both the mental health outcomes and substance use, they tend to increase with age. But the 10th graders have much better participation rates than our 12th graders, so that's why we're focusing in on 10th grade here. So for this one, for depression, the students were asked, did you ever feel so sad or hopeless? Most every day for the past 2 weeks or more, 2 weeks or more in a row that you stopped doing usual activities. And these depressive feelings have been increasing for quite a while up until 2021, and then dropped pretty significantly in 2023 from 40% to 30%. We rarely ever see drops like this in public health data, and I don't know why, but it's encouraging. It could just be a blip in the data and it's going to go back up. We're going to need to keep monitoring to see if it's a trend that will continue, but for now it's encouraging.
Did the rest of the state see something similar?
Yes. This is happening across the state. It wasn't unique to us. Yeah. Next slide. So this is anxiety. The students were asked over the last 2 weeks if they were bothered by feeling nervous, anxious, or on edge, or if they were unable to stop or control worrying. These are the same questions they ask in doctor's offices to help diagnose generalized anxiety disorder. Although this is not supposed to be a diagnosis, but we saw anxiety increase in 2021 and then kind of come back down to pre-pandemic levels around 33% in 2023. So it makes sense. It was a very overwhelming time, but it kind of dropped a little bit, not quite as dramatically as depression. Next slide. So for suicide ideation, the students were asked if they ever seriously considered attempting suicide. And here we see kind of a similar trend as depression, where it had been going up very quickly up until 2021 and then suddenly dropped. Again, I'm not sure why, and this is happening all across the state, but we're gonna keep monitoring and definitely keep supporting youth who are experiencing suicide ideation. Next slide. So some youth are more at risk than others. The graph on the left shows the rates of depression, anxiety, and suicide ideation and suicide attempts among the LGBTQ 10th graders in orange and the straight and cis 10th graders in the teal color, and our LGBTQ youth had significantly higher rates of all four. And then the same in the graph on the right. This is girls in orange and boys in the teal, and girls showed significantly higher rates of all four of these mental health outcomes than boys.
What is GAD do? I don't know what that means.
Oh, sorry. That stands for Generalized Anxiety Disorder, the two question, which is what what the graph that we've done before. Yeah. So now we'll look at the substance use trends. Alcohol, marijuana, and vapor products are the most commonly used substances. About 9% of 10th graders used alcohol in the past 3 days. Same with marijuana, it was about 9% that used marijuana in the past 30 days. Around 8% used some type of vapor product, and 3% misused prescription drugs. In 2023, Healthy Use Survey added a question about fentanyl. It's kind of an emerging issue, and 0.6% reported using fentanyl in the past 30 days.
Is it clear whether they overlap? Like, it's the same kids?
They can definitely overlap. It's not mutually exclusive. Yeah.
And this is with 10th graders, right?
Yeah, 10th graders.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a question.
Is the use of fentanyl, or the lack of at that point, because it's not available, or because they just haven't got into it?
It could be either.
Yeah.
They can't access it, or they just don't want.
Because nationwide, it's quite popular.
Yeah.
That number might also be abnormally low because people may not know they someone's cut with fentanyl.
Correct. So,
yeah, and this is a school-based survey. Yeah. Youth who are using fentanyl are probably struggling a lot and may not even be in school. Which could be a factor as well.
Quick question.
Yeah.
Can you go back? Are those numbers low? Would you consider those? Because I think back to when I was a 10th grader. Long time ago. I would have been floored if that's the only number of people in my high school. Of course, I was in California and San Francisco, yeah. Area, so probably a little different, but it just seems very low.
Yeah,
we're
going to be looking at some trends, but it's the lowest. In decades, for sure.
It's gone down. Do you know how many trend graphs to the end of it?
Yeah, next slide.
It's gone down significantly.
Here's the trend graph for alcohol. Yeah. It was around 30%.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah. This is similar to the
so
state.
It was 1 in 3.
Yeah.
So back if you're until like 1980.
It would have been 50% in 1980.
Well, it was in the 70s.
Yeah, but as see, it's really decreasing and decreased significantly even from 2018 to 2021, from 17% to 10%. And it stayed low in 2023, about 9%.
That's really amazing.
Next slide. So for marijuana, our rates stayed fairly stable from 2004 to 2018. The gray part is legalization from when it was legalized in 2012 to the first retail store opening in 2014. But then rates dropped pretty much to around 9% in 2021 and 2023. So that's great.
The comment was, it's not cool if your parents can do it.
Never mind, I don't want to.
Is this the next slide, Mallory, or you went
back? Yeah, that's the next one.
We go to the next one.
Can you undo that?
Are we out of order somehow?
Looks like you're going backwards.
I wasn't. I promise I wasn't.
It just appeared that way.
Did you note any correlation between increasing resources for students wanting assistance quitting smoking, quitting using marijuana,
there are questions about that in the survey. I haven't looked at that correlation specifically, but you could like ask that to see if there's some kind of association.
Yeah. Resources also offered or mentioned on the survey or not?
Yeah, I mean, like resources for students after they take the survey or?
Yeah, just curious if someone did disclose that they've been suicidal ideation.
Yeah, I think like the suicide ones, I think it does. We do answer a certain way to kind of the
But it's all anonymous, though, right?
It is anonymous, so the school can't, you know, trace the answers back to a specific student, but at the time of the survey, when they just pop up at the end.
So the schools are privy to this data?
Yes, but they can't trace it back to a specific student.
It's all done all on the same day and all the students take it. Can they opt not to do it because you had such a short, you know, like 50% that took it? They can opt out of taking it?
They don't have to take it. Okay. And they also don't have to answer every question. They don't feel okay. Many people answer any questions about suicide. They don't have to. It's completely voluntary, like no one's forcing them to take it.
Okay.
They also try to standardize from school to school when the survey is taken. So for example, if the football team has got a big meet or something and they know they're gonna be out of the school, they won't schedule healthy use survey. I'm being accurate about that.
Yeah.
And so they're careful in terms of standardizing this to get the most representative sample of kids they can get.
So this is a graph for vapor products. You can see it kind of goes up and down. And this is a pretty emerging issue. So this is as products are coming out in the market. 2018 is kind of when we saw the rise of Juul, and that was around 21% of 10th graders. But then has dropped again in 2021 and 2023 to 10.8%.
Has it dropped because there's not a lot of data? Or is it just?
I think, well, we're also seeing that youth are perceiving more risk in vapor product use. There's been a lot of campaigns about, you know, the risks of vaping, so it could be also that they just want
Can I just add, and correct me if I'm wrong, Kathleen, but these surveys don't necessarily tell you why, they tell you what and who, but they don't, we can speculate, but you, there are other ways of getting the information about why, but they don't generally tell you. We're drawn to that, we want to know why. This is just the first step in terms of defining what's happening and who's affected.
Yeah. So this is prescription drug misuse. So this is using prescription drugs that are not prescribed to you. And it was around 6 to 8% previously, and then dropped 2% in 2021, and then 3% in 2023. This is one of the few substances where we actually saw an increase in 2023, although it's going from 2% to 3%, so the vast majority of kids are not misusing prescription drugs. But the fact that it did increase a little bit where everything else stayed the same or decreased is notable. Next slide. We don't have DSU in 12 here, so we have to skip these. So that last slide was just links to resources. If you go to askhys.net, they have tons of fact sheets and the full data reports for all of the 200+ questions that are on the survey, and a data dashboard that you can export the data to. We also have a data dashboard on our website that has not been updated with the 2020 data, but will be soon. And then another one on ESD112's Prevent Coalition website that really focuses on the substance use data.
And the Prevent Coalitions that are across Clark County, they use this data, and that's how they work with you to address some of these issues. So we work really closely with them along with ESD112.
Can I, people often have questions about how accurate and how real these data are. We presented that information to the Board of Health at our earlier meeting. But first of all, this survey is developed from really standardized survey instruments, and we can get you the list of them. There are several questions that get at each of the same thing, and if the kids give conflicting answers, if the child gives a conflicting answer. For example, if you answer that you've never used marijuana, ever in your life, but then, and I think there's a question like that, but you then on the 30-day one, you say, yes, you have, or how many times you have. That whole survey is discarded. There's also a question about a fake drug name. They change that every 2 years.
Yeah, it's changed every year.
But if you say that you're using this drug, that's discarded. And if they're over the top on multiple questions, those are discarded. So there's a real effort to make sure that that the questions are being, and it is of course anonymous, so you can't trace it to anybody, but the ones that are don't make sense or are not internally consistent or discarded.
Like they're not being honest.
Right, and I think it's like, what is it about? It's a few percent. It's like, it's a very small amount.
3 to 4%.
3%, yeah.
So did you say it went from being paper testing to 3?
Yeah. In 2021, it was online or paper, mostly online, but starting in 2023, it's all online.
So I assume kids are using their own, their tablets are supplying with that school that they're logged in on. I'm just curious whether, I don't know, I just saw a lot of trends and things going down. And like, kids being afraid that somebody's going to trace it back to me, if I'm honest.
We think that might be why participation went down.
But we're also hearing from ESD 112 and the Prevent Coalition is that from a lot of these substances, when you talk to high schoolers, they're reporting that they're not using these substances, you know, in smaller groups. So that's anecdotal, but yeah. And again, it's not just trends in Clark County, it's across the state, across the country.
Are there any plans to standardize how the test is administered? So you mentioned, you know, like on a tablet or a personal computer, or is there any work on that?
I think it has to be on a school issued device, but I don't know for sure. There is a standard protocol that all schools have to follow.
And that's why the thing, like, they want to have it when their kids are all in school and not, like, for example, the football team being gone for an away game. So it is, there's a list of things if you go to the site how they talk about how it's standardized from school to school.
Thank you. Does anybody have any more questions?
I just wanted to add to one of the, I think you're checking with Kathleen, and Tori Lyons was not able to be here tonight from ESD 112, but we will have a representative from ESD at our next Board of Health meeting, so they're going to be also going into some of those programs that they have, which might answer some of the questions that we had tonight. And so
that's tomorrow morning.
Yeah, that will be on CBTV. It will be posted to CBTV.org a few days after after that presentation. So
yeah.
You're all welcome to go there and check it out as well.
We just have one ask of you, and we ask this of all of our partners. In the event that you live next to a parent, a teacher, an administrator, you have a friend, whatever, and this comes up, the HYS, we really want to stress the importance of this survey. It's the only survey we have around health-related data for our youth. So it's tough on the schools to do this, to take a whole class period, and we're always looking with the schools to encourage them either to stick with HYS or to, you know, administer it if they haven't in the past. So that's one takeaway of an ask we have. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Next on our agenda is Dr. Melnick for health update.
Yeah, there's a few things. I'm gonna start with pertussis, also known as whooping cough. So we got out a press release today. So we've had an alarming increase in whooping cough, pertussis. We first issued a news release in June when the cases began to increase, but now it's even gotten, we've seen a more significant rise. So to give you an idea, so far this year, in 2024, we've had 229 cases. That's more than we've had in the last 5 years before that combined. Last year we had 14 cases the entire year. This year we already have, we're only in, you know, to the end of August, and we've already had 229 cases. We've had 183 cases reported since June 1st. So we've had, pertussis can be pretty serious. So we've had one person under 18 has been hospitalized, fortunately discharged from the hospital, but of the 229 cases so far this year, and the disease is worse in the younger you are. So in young infants, it's a pretty severe, and I think, if I remember correctly, the CDC has a site, we actually see a video of a child, of a baby with whooping cough. 30 of the 229 cases were under a year of age. And the other thing is about, you know, during that first year, they're just getting their first series of vaccinations. So they're more susceptible as well. 45% of the cases are younger than age 5. Another fact is that 65% of the cases are in people who have never, ever received a pertussis vaccine. So when you consider the fact that most, the vast majority, fortunately, you know, 80-90% of people are vaccinated, the small denominator for those who have not been vaccinated, but 65% of the cases we're seeing are people who have never been vaccinated for this. The other thing about pertussis or whooping cough is that the first 2 weeks of illness, the symptoms are like a mild cold. But you're, and then the horrible cough begins after 2 weeks. But you're contagious during those first 2 weeks. So you won't even know that you have whooping cough. And you're, it's respiratory spread, so you'll be contagious. So the best way to prevent this is from being vaccinated. So we'll talk about more in a minute. So, and actually, we've the other recommendation is, besides regular series, women who are pregnant in the third trimester for each pregnancy, they're recommended to get the vaccine because it helps protect them as well as their newborns. Okay, so we've issued provider advisories. We sent out another news release today, and it's been in the news, which gets me to my next. I'll try to be as brief as possible. Does anybody have any questions?
I have a question. Is it the same thing as croup? Can people say that?
No.
Something else?
Yeah.
Okay. Dr. Melnick, I was wondering if there's a geographic pattern to where these cases are showing up.
I have to talk to my team, to our team about that. I don't know that we have enough cases to show a clear geographic pattern, but we're seeing it more, I mean, we're seeing it more in unimmunized people, so where the immunization levels are lower, and immunization rates vary geographically. And actually, immunization rates vary by school building as well. So there's some school, well, I'm gonna talk about this, so maybe I'll talk about measles first, because that's another vaccine preventable disease, and then I'll talk about immunization rates. So you might recall earlier this year we had a measles outbreak between us and Whatcom County. I think we ended up having 8 cases, if I remember correctly. And you might recall in 2019 we had the huge measles outbreak where we had 71 cases. Well, over the last couple of months, our neighbors to the south have been experiencing a measles outbreak. And in Oregon, they've identified 30 cases. And guess what? Every one of those cases is unvaccinated. The measles vaccine is one of the most effective vaccines we know of. 2 doses of measles vaccine gives you 97% immunity. All the cases in Oregon are people who are unvaccinated. Most of them, fortunately, reside far. And by the way, measles is one of the most contagious viruses we know of. Most of the cases, 20 of them are in Marion County, that's the Salem area. 9 cases in Clackamas and 1 case in Multnomah County. And 2 people have been hospitalized. Fortunately, no deaths. Most of the cases, 23 to 30, are in people 19 years of age or younger. So getting back to immunizations, so in Clark County, about 90% of K-12 students, this is similar to the state rate, were up to date on their vaccinations for the past school year. But as I mentioned, there are pockets in the county where there are some public schools have rates as in the 80s, in the low 80s. And you can look this up. You can go on the state immunization dashboard, and you can actually look at it, look at the immunization rates by kindergarten, K-12, for example. And you can look at it by state, by county, by school district, and by school building. And you can actually click on each school building in any county, including Clark County, and look at the immunization rates. We have several private schools with rates in the low 60s. So you got 40% of the, you're in a congregate setting and you got 40% of the kids not adequately immunized. The vaccination exemption rates, so in Washington State you can get an exemption, a medical exemption. By the way, medical exemptions for vaccines are incredibly rare. You can get a religious exemption, although I'm not aware of any religion that says thou shalt not vaccinate. You guys might be, but I'm not aware of them. And then you can get the philosophic exemption. You might recall after our 2019 outbreak, we got a statute passed that removed the philosophic exemption rate for the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine. but the others you can still get a philosophic exemption. So in Clark County, 7.4% of K through 12 students had vaccine exemptions in the last year. 4% religious, 3.5% personal, 0.9% medical, and actually they total more than 7.4% because some students have more than one exemption. Statewide, we have 7.4% here. Statewide, 4% of K through 12 students had exemptions. Among our kids here, K through 12, the vaccination rate is highest for MMR at 94.5%, but that's because you can't get the personal, the philosophic exemption anymore, or we think that's why. Although the religious exemption rate went up when the philosophic exemption rate
went up. Who approves the exemption?
Huh?
Who approves them? Who approves them?
If a parent says they have a philosophic exemption, they have a philosophic exemption. Nobody can force them. Can you define a philosophic exemption?
Is that the same with religious?
Yeah, if they have, if they say they have a religious exemption, they don't have to. There's no like great legal proof for that.
I come from California, and you go to public school, you have to be vaccinated.
The medical exemption, you need a note from your provider that for a medical exemption. But the philosophic exemption, it used to be worse because people would show up with their kids and they hadn't gotten them vaccinated and they were dropping them off in school and they wanted them to be in school and they didn't want that. So they were able to choose a philosophic exemption and get their kids into school.
This makes my head hurt.
West Virginia got rid of all of their exemptions, and they have the highest vaccination rates.
It's not rocket science. It's just science.
Well, yeah, well, come and listen to some, if you want, Councilor Marshall can invite them to Board of Health meetings, and you can hear this stuff. If you, yeah, it makes my head water.
Watching
too.
Painful. Yeah.
Do we have watching it?
What's that?
Just watching those is painful. Yes. I can imagine sitting there and having that in your face for however long that goes on. It's just
3 minutes and a crack.
It feels a lot longer than that.
Question, you said they got rid of the philosophic exemption.
Or the measles, mumps,
and
rubella.
Right.
Yeah.
Why did they do that for that vaccine only and not others?
Because, and it was bipartisan, by the way. Representative Harris and Representative Stonier were a great combination in making that happen. Because we had that huge measles outbreak.
Okay.
That they were from Clark. They led the charge. They were from Clark County, and state representatives and they led the charge.
Is there any talk about doing this for DPT or any of the other vaccines?
Politically, it's still an uphill battle.
I mean, with the numbers you just gave for DPT, it's crazy.
Well, we got pertussis now. I mean, God forbid it's going to take a death or something like that. A child dying of this. Yeah. I mean, measles. Go ahead.
Do you have to get vaccinated again for tests? Because I'm sure I got it when I was young.
Yeah, so every 10, at least, it's combined with the diphtheria and tetanus vaccine.
If I got a tetanus shot, mm-hmm. It was included?
Was it included? How long ago was it?
I got a tetanus shot about a month ago.
Hopefully they gave you the
Kaiser disease. Anybody know Kaiser disease?
Yeah, you should have.
Okay.
But you can check.
My arm hurt.
Check with your check with your mind shot on that.
Tdap.
TDAP. Tetanus, diphtheria, and acellular pertussis. Now the pertussis vaccine, you're gonna get me going here. So there used to be a whole cell vaccine that was a lot more effective.
Yeah.
But it was discontinued because of side effects with the whole cell vaccine. So they replaced it with the acellular vaccine, and that's why you need multiple shots. And as I mentioned, pregnant women should be getting each pregnancy, even if their last pregnancy was a year ago. They need to get that in their last trimester.
How effective is it if you're fully vaccinated? It's still not even if you're fully vaccinated.
Well, it's a decent. I mean,
is it?
We haven't seen much pertussis
in the vaccination.
I mean, considering how contagious it is, and to have 14 cases in 2023, it's pretty effective.
So
and if you do get pertussis, and you're vaccinated, you're less likely to have severe disease.
And so you're, most of those 220 or something you said are unvaccinated?
65% of them were unvaccinated, never had a vaccine. If you take them and add the people who are under vaccinated, partially vaccinated, 69% were either unvaccinated or partially vaccinated. And then when you think of the denominator of people who haven't been, the rate is significantly higher. I don't have the exact percentages in terms of effect on this, but it's pretty, you know, it's pretty good. You still feel, you...
No, I was just for a couple of days. It was pretty sore, like she hit me.
Yeah, well, there's no more soreness with this vaccine than anything else, any other vaccine you get, so. But it's a lot less, you had a couple of, sore arm for a couple of days, a lot better than getting...
Oh, yeah, vaccines. I'm in.
And adults can get it as well, so. Okay, so we have, during the measles outbreak, I remember it started in early January, and during January and February, we saw our number of immunizations that we gave skyrocketed. People really came in, and so our measles vaccination rates went up, but then they decreased slowly since then. So we're still at above 90% there, so.
What age is the vaccine?
I'm sorry?
What age gets vaccinated for that?
12 to 15 months, and then 4 to 6 years, school age. Yeah, we have it on our website. You get the whole immunization schedule for everything. But, so yeah, so it went up, and then it kind of decreased, it's gone down again.
So when you're saying it went, the measles vaccination rate went way up because of the press?
Well, because, yeah, there was an outbreak going on, and people... Well, I don't know whether, we know that we measured measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, and that went up in 2000, and, you know, early 2019, so then it went, yeah, it's decreased since then.
I'm sorry, I have to agree with Tracy. When I was little, oh, it's time for school, let's go get your shots, and there was no question.
Yeah.
We didn't have this. No.
Do we have, in Oregon, they have exclusion day where, like, if you are not fully vaccinated by, you know, the third week of school or whatever, you're not allowed to go to school anymore. Do we just, like, start with you're not allowed to go to school? Or
well, you won't be allowed in school. I don't know exactly the date is, but you can get a exemption. So you get exemptions, you get back into school.
Yeah, stupid.
It's interesting to me because having spent some years in Tlingit Village in Alaska. The kids, part of my job as a public health nurse there was to immunize all the kids. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't even an issue. I don't even remember sending something home for the parents to sign. They were so grateful to get those vaccines because they had, or their elders had experienced horrible loss of life and health. So it just, I keep thinking, like, what are we not doing that we can do? Does somebody need to see a baby with pertussis? Because it would just take one time, and you would not want to ever see that again.
So it's challenging. As a physician, you know, vaccination is one of the best things we do. And when we think about it, the turn of the 19th century, or the turn of the 20th century, I should say, communicable disease is the number one cause of death, and vaccines had a, and sanitation, of course, had a lot to do with turning that around. A couple of things: we don't see things like polio anymore, although not too long ago there was a case on the East Coast. So, not long after somebody testified at the Vancouver City Council saying that they don't think polio should be required for school, we don't see smallpox. We don't see these diseases anymore. I mean, I think, if I remember correctly, measles killed 500 people a year in the United States and 50,000 hospitalizations each year. We don't see that. We don't see polio anymore. We take it for granted. The other thing about vaccines are they're one thing we do when we're well. You know, we get sick, we don't mind taking all kinds of crazy medication that can hurt us to make us better. But vaccine is something you take when you're well to prevent you from getting sick. And we get into all these issues about, you can't make me put something in my body or something like that. So anyway, it's challenging. You can get me going on and on.
You get me going too, because when they bring their animals to my clinic, you know, they came in for limping or something, and I'll say, it looks like you need vaccines. They go, oh, no, we don't believe in them for us or the animal. And I said, I'm sorry, I can't treat you. There's a law that says those dogs have to be vaccinated for rabies.
Rabies,
it's a fatal disease. And if they put their foot down, I'll say, here's the door. And I have the ability to do that, but schools apparently do not. So,
well, I think those exemptions, and I think that would be at least get rid of that philosophical exemptions. It would be a legislative issue.
Yeah. So I actually went to a webinar on Monday by the Public Health Communications Collaborative. And the title of the webinar was New Approaches to Vaccine Communications, and there was a lot. Were you there?
No, it's great. If they have any great ideas, I'm all ears.
I can send that to whoever is interested. They uploaded the video today online, but there was some really gold nuggets.
If you can send me that link, I'll include those in the notes. We'll get those out to everybody.
Okay.
So
yeah.
If you wouldn't mind sending that to me and Mallory maybe, and I think I'm on the email, so if you want to just send that over.
By the way, if you want to hear some of the legal history around this, there's a Supreme Court decision called Jacobson versus Massachusetts. It's in 1905, so it was about a father and a son. There's a smallpox outbreak going on, and smallpox vaccine was mandatory. Father and son refused to get the vaccine. And, you know, the point of getting the vaccine, and pertussis is a perfect example, is to not only protect yourself, but to protect people around you. So you're an adult and you get pertussis and you bring it home to your family where your kids are not vaccinated. Yeah, I mean, we do that to protect people around us. They lost their case. I mean, the Supreme Court ruled that you could require this. So Jacobson versus Massachusetts, 1905, I think. So it's like these arguments have been going on for a really long time. Okay, I'm done pontificating, I apologize. Okay, I have a friendly order. By the way, feel free, Councilor Marshall, they should feel free to anytime come to the Board of Health, and
you can
electronically
online. Yep. You can see past meetings on CBTV.
Highly recommended. Okay. And by the way, the other thing I'd say is that I think in the veterinary world we do a lot better. You have an animal, you get regular reminders about vaccines.
True.
How many of you receive reminders about? You do?
I do.
Providers doing a good job.
Kaiser's
doing that. All right.
So it's legacy.
Mm-hmm. It's here for legacy. Okay.
I think they say if you do it through a pharmacy, CVS also.
Yes.
If they're on it, they'll send you a reminder when you're due.
Good. Okay. Good to see that. Okay.
How long does it take for that vaccine to be effective? Because they just checked it was July 30th.
Like, were you worried?
Yeah.
He doesn't want to get
it's not the first vaccine you ever got.
No, I've had it.
So you're probably protected. I mean,
yeah,
it's
did check
it.
Did say that.
Yeah, good.
Usually
about 2 weeks.
Okay, then I'm good.
I mean, 14 days is the standard. I haven't looked it up for pertussis, but, you know, with flu and COVID-19, you say 14 days. Okay.
I think I revealed my age, too, when I called it DPT. That's the old name for it, though.
I know.
So, speaking about vaccine preventable disease, I got a few more to talk about. One is COVID-19. So you should know that emergency department visits and hospitalizations due to COVID-19 has increased slowly during the summer across Washington, that have kind of leveled off and begun to decrease in recent weeks. So statewide, COVID-19 accounts for about 2% of emergency department visits and 2% of hospitalizations. In Clark County, emergency department visits have accounted for about 2% of, COVID has accounted for about 2% of emergency visits. But in recent weeks, hospitalizations due to COVID-19 have increased in Clark County. So last month at this time, it was responsible for 1.4% of hospitalizations, but during the most recent week, 2.8% of hospitalizations. So The CDC recently updated its COVID-19 vaccine recommendations, and by the way, the FDA just approved the updated vaccine, so it should be out. I can't give you the exact date, but out pretty soon. Recommends everybody 6 months of age and older receive the updated 2024-2025 vaccine. There's a new Omicron variant out that's taken over, so that it should help with that. And even if you get COVID, if you've been vaccinated, so it does help prevent infection, regardless of what you might hear at Board of Health meetings. But even more significantly than that, it helps prevent severe disease, including hospitalizations and deaths. Is it 100% effective? Not anywhere close to that, but certainly very effective in preventing hospitalizations and deaths. I mean, the flu vaccine is 40%, 60% effective, depending on the time, the year. That's not 100%, but if I could do something that has a 50% chance of me not dying in a car wreck, I'll do that. I mean, you don't need 40 to 60% ain't bad. So the CDC is recommending, as usual, an annual influenza vaccine for everyone 6 months or older. And September and October are the best times. Get vaccinated early, it lasts through the season. The updated vaccines, flu vaccines, are all trivalent and will protect against H1N1, H3N2, and B, influenza B, Victoria lineage, and the CDC recently updated its recommendations for RSV, that's respiratory syncytial virus. The recommendation is vaccination for adults who did not get vaccinated last year. It's not an annual vaccine, so you don't have to get it every year. But everyone age 75 and older should receive it, and people between the ages 60 and 74 for an increased risk, for example, of chronic disease like COPD, lung disease, should get it. Heart disease, or people who are living in long-term care facilities. And actually, CDC is also recommending that people who are 36 weeks pregnant during September through January get a dose of maternal RSV vaccine to protect their babies. And monoclonal antibodies for RSV are available for infants younger than 8 months who are born during the season or entering their first RSV season, as well as some infants 18 to 19 months who are at risk of a more severe illness. So that's RSV. There's a quiz at the end of this.
And if anybody's with Kaiser, they're not getting their new COVID vaccines until the first or second week in September, and you can't schedule those vaccinations yet, but as soon, just keep checking every day with Kaiser.
Get them as soon as they're available. Okay, I think that was all that I was. Sorry for going on so long and ranting a bit.
There's a lot going on.
Well, I'm really worried about whooping cough, because we've had all these ridiculous number of cases. It's really contagious, and school started.
Also, one of the risks with that is that ERs have been shut down because of whooping cough, and that's very difficult when you already have a lot of people that are needing the ER, and then to have to take an ER out of service is no small thing.
Yeah.
Having an exposure of a high level exposure like that is devastating to an emergency room and the ICU. The staff are exposed as well.
That was really highlighted during the measles outbreak, because measles is so contagious. You can be in a room 2 hours after somebody with measles was there and get it. Lingers. It's really nasty. So, and 1 to 3 deaths per 1,000 of measles. It's really cheery.
Thank you for that update. That was
bad.
Good news, bad news, I guess.
And Councilor Marshall gets to hear it all or something again tomorrow morning.
Very good question.
If you haven't gotten it heard enough yet. Do you have questions or
no, I'll save the legislative
issue for tomorrow.
I'm not going to go there, but you guys can go there. Yeah, you're the elected officials.
All right. The Bylaws and Membership Committee has been meeting, and as far as membership is concerned, Peggy Carlson has moved out of the area, and so will be stepping down from being on BAC, and her term was up at the end of September. So we'll be advertising for her replacement, and I think there's going to be two or three others coming up that will be taken care of, so we're going to have some changes in membership over the next couple of months. But I just wanted to let you know that Peggy, like I said, has moved out of the area and won't be joining us anymore. As you know from the last few meetings, the Bylaws Committee, Peggy and Marla and I have been working on changing the bylaws by group. The group wanted to change our decision-making model from Robert's Rules to a consensus method. And we've been going over that for several months now, and you've seen drafts of that, and you should have gotten the draft in your email prior to this meeting. And so this is the meeting that we're going to vote on that. And so I wasn't going to go over each of the things. What we've done is gone through the bylaws and changed anything that says Robert's Rules or voting majority would be changed to consensus. And then there is a description of how we would do consensus, and I will review that. So what we would do is at the time when we're ready to vote by consensus is that we would go around and ask each person whether you voted yes, if you wanted to allow it. Like, I can live with it. I have a few little misgivings, but I can live with it and it's okay. Pause would mean that I need to have more information before I can have a vote. And block would mean I fundamentally disagree with that. So we would go around and ask each person for consensus that way. A consensus would be reached when a vote of support or allow with no more than two members voting to block would mean that issue would pass. If someone says that they needed to pause and need more information, then we would definitely need to pause and have more conversation so that that person would have more information to be able to say, yes, I'm going to vote for it, or I'm going to allow it, or I'm going to block it. So that's in general what we're moving towards, what the bylaws are going to be changing for. So at this point, does anybody have any questions or comments before we vote? We've had a lot of conversation in the last few months, so it shouldn't be something new except for some of our newer members.
How will we vote for this?
We'll use all the tools to do this.
And maybe just one other piece of the history of this conversation is that the reason that we started down this path is that we feel, especially those of us that have been on committees that use Robert's Rules and consensus, is that it's my opinion, and a lot of other people apparently agree, that with the consensus model, people are more comfortable participating. And with Robert's Rules, because the Robert's Rules book is like, I think, over 800 pages now, nobody can really know all those rules or care. And so we were looking for something that would be practical, useful, and not waste people's time, but hopefully get to the point of what do we want to do? Any questions at all before we go forward? Hearing none.
I got one more thing to add. The only other thing that we added as well was that if a member is going to be absent and we know that there's going to be a vote, that you can also provide a proxy vote prior to that. But you would miss out on any conversation, knowing that you miss out on the conversation as well. So you could vote accordingly, but there is an allowance for those that won't be at the meeting that choose to vote by the consensus method.
Okay,
sorry,
Marla. Okay, no problem.
So then the agendas going forward will tell us if something is going to be voted
yes,
on.
Yes.
Like maybe clearly say, like maybe in bold vote, so that we
okay. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Because this says review and approve, and this says vote, so we're using different.
Yes. Well, we're reviewing and now we're going to vote.
Okay, well, then I think the next thing is I will ask if someone would make a motion that we accept the changes that we proposed for this portion of our bylaws.
I move to accept the changes.
Right. And the second?
I second.
Second.
Thank you. We have two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Any more discussion? All those in favor of changing our bylaws from Robert's Rules to consensus, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Very good. Okay, our bylaws are now changed to using a consensus model. So now we're going to need to learn how to do that. I need to study up before our next decision.
Before it's voting.
Yeah. I've worked on the language so much I might have it figured out. All right, so thank you very much for helping us with that and moving to this new model. Okay, Roxanne, do you want to talk about the Board of Health retreat?
Yes, so we finally got a date that works for everybody for our planning session for the Board of Health and Fat retreat. And if you all recall, this is going to happen beginning of next year when we have 2 new counselors placed. So, but we're planning it for this year. We're planning this year for the offsite retreat to happen next year, probably first quarter. So we have the first meeting. We were finally able to get it on the agenda for September 20th at 2:00. It's virtual. So if anyone else would like to join the committee, you can let me know. Just send me a note, we can certainly go for that. Basically, what we're going to be doing that planning meeting for the planning committee, they're going to decide on a date. And the length of the Board of Health retreat. So do we want it half day, do we want all day, do we want 6 hours, kind of that stuff. We're also going to talk a little bit about a high-level agenda that we want for that day, and then also identify if there's any sort of potential training opportunities that we want for that day as well. So we will have an agenda ready to go for that meeting. The public health staff is actually going to take care of all the logistics, so we're not going to ask you as part of the planning committee to like run around and find a room for us or anything like that, or fund the catering. We'll do all of those pieces internally to public health, but really what we're looking for the community to do is just help us to plan what the event will look like, and then we will get it set on the calendar for early next year. So, again, that meeting, September 20th at 2:00, it's virtual. If anybody else would like to join, just let us know. And excited to find the guests at that opening. So, any questions on that? All right, great. Thank you all.
All right, thanks, Roxanne. Mm-hmm. So speaking of committees, because Peggy is moving off, the bylaws committee is now down to Peggy and I. And then when we add membership, I think Tyler is the membership portion, unless he's resigned from that.
I have not.
Okay.
Michael was on that too.
Yes. Uh-huh. Right. And Michael, are you still?
Just on the membership portion.
Just on the membership portion. Okay. Well, we do need to meet afterwards because now that we've passed this on the piece of bylaws, now we need to look at the membership piece. And I think you two both had reported to us that there's some inconsistencies around terms of office and officers' terms and et cetera. And so we need to start relooking at the membership piece, especially when we have some new members or some members opting out of membership and where we're gonna be getting some new members. So if there's anyone here that's interested in becoming part of the bylaws committee and or the bylaws membership committee together, we'll be meeting at that end of the room after this meeting for a short, like, let's look at what has to be done and then let's plan when we want to meet and have that conversation. So anyone's welcome to join our group at any time. So we'll be meeting afterwards. All right. So there's going to be a local Board of Health training that's going to be held in Leavenworth this year, October 1st through the 3rd. And this is a time when all the Board of Health and the Public Health Advisory Committees get together for training. And some of our members last year went, I think Marla, you went, Dr. Melnick went, and Elmo went, and I'm trying to see if there's anybody else here. And they felt like it was very, very valuable. And like I said, this year it's October 1st through 3rd in Leavenworth. And the registration deadline is September 10th, is that right, Roxanne? So if there's anyone that's interested or curious about going to that, You might want to talk to Marla or Elma at our next meeting to see, well, our next meeting will be, are you going?
Three of the Board of Health members will be attending.
Great, okay, all right, yeah. Well, we heard it was really valuable and we learned some lessons from the people that went last year and adopted some of those concepts. So if anyone's interested, I think there is some support for you to go as far as financial support to go to Leavenworth for any BAC members. So if you think you're interested, you might let Mallory or Roxanne know, and they'll work on the details with you for that. So going to Leavenworth in the fall might be a really nice little outing if you're interested. So I would highly recommend it.
And everything's paid for, travel,
right.
Mm-hmm. Lodging.
Yeah. Quick question, you said it's for training. Training of what?
Oh, it was a lot of different things. There was a section on communication. There were some conversations about Board of Health and committees like this, all to work better together. There were a whole section on legal considerations, which was fascinating to me. I would love to go again, but I feel like people who haven't had a chance to go, I would really like to see more people get to experience it.
There's a lot of attention to public health law and how it relates to, as Marla was saying, Board of Health versus in committees like this.
Okay.
The word training for me.
Okay,
October 1st through the 3rd. All right. At this time, this is when we kind of go around if anybody has any updates that you want to share with the group. Now is the time to share. Our next meeting will be September 24th, and that one will be virtual, so that'll be at 5:30. And again, you'll be getting a notification with the agenda and such, but we'll have a virtual meeting on September 24th. And I want to wish Chief Maury the best of luck. It's been a pleasure to have you here, and you will be greatly missed, but I know that you will enjoy your time. Another fun is first. All right. If there's nothing more, we'll adjourn our meeting and we'll see everyone on the 24th. And anybody that wants to be part of bylaws and membership, we'll be back there.